In the fall each year we all congregate, the vows all gathered at the church of tailgate. The scriptures reading from the book of Munson, our favorite verse, my God of precious. Drunk and obnoxious, we're Georgia faith, ain't nothing finer in the land. Now the 3,000 of our best friends, it's Saturday in that thing.
Welcome to the Saturday Athens podcast. I'm your host, Seth Saunders, and we are gearing up for week two of the college football season and fired up to have our buddy Chris Marler back with us. Chris came on last year. We saw him at Media Days. He's always one of the best follows on Twitter, even though apparently, buddy, there are some folks on Twitter who do not know who you are. Welcome back. We are glad to have you.
That was one of my favorite things that's ever happened on Twitter. And just God bless those young men that are, they clearly don't like me, and that's fine. I barely liked myself up until like 4 months ago, so I totally get it. Just join the club. But I mean, it was confusing. It's like, I feel like I have to say this and preface this with every single time on like a Georgia podcast, but like, there are a few people, especially outside of your fan base, that have like been banging the drum louder than me for Kirby in this program and how great they've done. I still like to give the fans shit because that's what we do. But like, yeah, man, it's the best program in the country, and he's doing everything at an elite level, better than everyone else in the country, and it's not really that close. So it always cracks me up because I'm like, man, I spent the entire offseason saying all these positive things, all this time I spent on deep dives, and then people are like, you didn't like our first quarter offense? Like, F you. I'm like, okay. <It's> like,
yeah, I was cracking up. But I will say, as you usually do, you have turned it into a positive. So tell our listeners what you're doing with that. Got some T-shirts made, and where are the proceeds going to go for that?
Yeah, man, I appreciate you bringing it up. So, and for those not familiar, the whole thing, there was like a Georgia podcast that threw out something about how they said Chris Marler has been tweeted about us 20 times, and he'll still call us insecure. Side note, if you think that like that's a shot at me, like I'm that insecure, anybody that's followed me on Twitter for the past 2 years or known me in real life for my whole life, like, yeah, insecure, duh. That's one of the main things. But no, like it was funny because they didn't actually at me or like say, like they just said my government name. Like I was, you know, the first day of school in elementary school or something. And so he said this whole thing, and there's a couple, he got like 240 likes, man. There was like a lot of people that agreed with it. And this one person wrote back, I think like, I in my mind it was in all caps, but I don't know. But it was just some like random person on Twitter, and he just wrote back very bluntly, like, who the F is Chris Marler? And I just was laughing at the whole thing. So I tweeted out, I said, I'm absolutely making merch that says, I'm absolutely making who the F is Chris Marler merch. And it went over pretty well. And as I try to do, like all jokes aside, with most things in my life, turn like a negative into a positive, or just something that might not be positive into a positive. So I decided, since the response was so great about the merch idea, and there were so many positive responses to it, to sell some T-shirts and some stickers and buttons that we'll have. I haven't made them yet. They're going to be hopefully made. We'll get some mock-ups and stuff like that next week after I get back from Tuscaloosa. But all the proceeds, we're going to sell those three things, and all the proceeds will go to an organization called My Sister's House in South Carolina, which is for women and children who have come from domestic violence homes to help them get back on their feet.
Yeah, I love that, brother. I think that's so cool. And I also think it's just an example of using the platform, right? Like to have a platform and then use it for something positive. And so, man, I love that. So, yeah, I mean, we will we'll stock up on that. I'll rock a button all season long if you need me to, brother. You are.
Yeah, I appreciate that. No, but it's good to be back, man. It's always good to talk to you. And I'm excited for the slate of games this week. It's kind of low key, like it's like sneaky good this week.
Yeah, so I want to talk with you briefly about last week, because I thought, with it being, I would say, less than sexy slate of games for week one, some pretty interesting things happened. Obviously, the TCU Colorado game has sucked all of the oxygen out of the collective college football world, it seems. And it was an awesome, awesome game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a game on our sheet this week that I think is compelling. And then you got obviously the LSU-Florida State game, Clemson-Duke, a lot of things going on. What was your biggest takeaway from week one and or biggest surprise from week one?
Well, Alabama was clearly going to win the national championship after that game against Middle Tennessee. I'm kidding. That is not my biggest secret. Bobo sucks. You should fire him, and Bama's winning it all. No, I think to love the Colorado thing.
That's right.
It was really cool. It's a really cool situation. It's because, like, listen, I don't think that anybody that was like a skeptic, like watching Deion, like go after all these critics, like, bro, they were 1-11 last year. They gave up an average of 53 points per game. Excuse me, in their last six games of the year last year. In the Pac-12, which is like, I get there's offenses there, but it wasn't like the Pac-12 was like a murderer's row necessarily a year ago. Colorado was one of the, they were probably the worst Power 5 team in the country. And I think that going into this year, you know, we've never seen this before. 86 players on this team that weren't on the team a year ago. We've never seen that in, I'm not saying this to make a joke or make light of the situation, but Marshall had an entire team pass away in a tragic plane crash in like the late 70s. That didn't, like, that's different than this. Like, it's 86 is a, it is an absurd amount of number. You have 85 scholarships on a player. So even with that tragedy, it's like the only closest thing we've seen before. We've never seen it at this level. Obviously for different reasons, probably not the best example to bring up. But, like, Colorado going into this week against TCU, I thought TCU, one, they're the worst tackling team maybe in college football history. They were so bad. Mm-hmm. But it was really cool to see Shadir Sanders be legit. It was really cool to see Travis Hunter, for those of us that haven't seen him. Because, like, that's the number one overall player in the country, and he's almost being, like, kept, you know, in this, like, minor – it's like if Ronald Acuna was, you know what, I'm gonna step away, and I'm just going to go play in, like Japan for a season or something like that, right? Like, it's like, I'm not going to be able to watch these games. Like and all of a sudden he's comes on this level, and he's fantastic. I mean, he was incredible to watch. The stuff with Clemson and Dabo – man, them and LSU, it is just like the biggest, oh no, the consequences of my own actions come to life I've seen in quite some time. Because I heard all offseason that LSU was a championship caliber team, and you know this as a fan of the defending back-to-back national champions, there's a lot of characteristics that make up a championship team. You don't make mental mistakes. You don't make stuff that, like, you don't make mistakes in key situations. Like, it's not just about, like, converting third and one or fourth and one, but it's about having the focus to not have drops, being able to, like, you know, like, take advantage of timely turnovers or penalties, or not having penalties. LSU at every turn looks nothing like a championship team, and they're still going to be a good football team. And I think they will have a fine season, but that is not a championship caliber team by any means. And then the last one, at least, man, Clemson, my God, like, you got to give Duke its credit, because that was awesome. I don't think, like, I just, like, there's just nobody that was pulling for Clemson in that game outside of Clemson. Everything about it was so peak college football, and I loved every second of it. Dabo complaining about the walk from the locker room to the stadium, and then some asshole putting in an obstacle course of bouncy houses in the way.
They put the bounce bounces up.
I was dying. Like, and then Riley Leonard winning the game, they storm the field. Riley Leonard comes in and has the mind or the wherewithal to sit there and be like, oh, by the way, whoever's professor is, can I get an extension on my homework? Then the professor is like, no, you can't.
Unbelievable. Like, the most Duke thing ever.
You talk about, like, the slate of games and Clemson coming in and, like, going to Duke and like, really getting dismantled. And you made – we talked about nonstop, like, what we thought the problems with Clemson were, which was, like, you got to get a better OC. And he does finally go out of, like, the Clemson tree and the Clemson family – and goes and gets Garrett Riley, which is, like, especially since the guy at Washington went back to Washington, probably the biggest free agent pickup in the coordinator position in the offseason, like, in the entire country, lays an egg. And really, they only scored because they got a muffed punt from Duke in, like, inside, like, the 20-yard line. There's a lot of questions at Clemson that I think, like, you know, we just pinned them on DJU, and it might just be the fact that Clemson is just, like, not very good. And they're not built like a championship team anymore for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, I thought it was a fascinating week one, man. Like, I think the Colorado story is so cool. And we got another team on the slate this week that we're going to talk about that did something not to that level, but very close with G.J. Kenny and Texas State. I mean, 56 new guys there. I mean, this is kind of the new world we live in. And, man, the Colorado thing was compelling to us too. We talked about it last week. Like, brother, we're not talking like they just had 86 pairs of shoes. Like, we're talking Shadur, and we're talking Travis Hunter. Travis Hunter was number one player in the country
boys and girls. Like, it's not like they just got some dude. And then you got Dylan Edwards, who was, dude, what, freshman of the week this week, or Doak Walker player of the week this week. And then you got, I mean, dude, Kvasia Smoke, didn't he make the box score this week? And he's on that roster. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah. It's just, it's they are an interesting team. I want to talk about elephant in the room with LSU, which is maybe the best half of football they played all year last year was the second half of the SEC championship game with Garrett Nussmeier at quarterback, who I feel like never even got in the conversation for the job. And I don't know, man. Like, maybe there's something to that. Also, what in the hell were they doing with Harold Perkins on there all night? You got maybe the most dynamic defensive player in the country, and we're just going to drop him in coverage all night and play man? I don't know, man. It was a puzzling coaching performance.
And the thing with LSU that I think that bothered me the most with it, right, is, again, I was very hesitant to say anything about, like, them being a contending team because I haven't seen LSU stack years, like elite years, back-to-back in quite some time. A lot of times it feels like there's, like, a massive fall-off even, right? So LSU comes in, and I understand they have a new coach, but I said this in the offseason, and you can call me a homer or whatever, but that entire resume was built off of, and that offseason hype was built off of one win by 1 point in early November last year. And you guys might not remember that because you were coming off an absolute dismantling of Tennessee that same day. But like that win against Bama in Death Valley, like, you just take a step back. Like I've watched, you know, Bama football for most of my life. That's the sixth win they've had against Bama in Death Valley since 1957. Right? Like, it's a massive deal. And you should celebrate and storm the field and all that kind of stuff. It's what makes Huntsville great. But then people really forgot about, like, you go to Arkansas the week after with everything in front of you. And they're playing a back quarterback and you only win by three. Then you go to A&M, who is horrible, and you get beat by double digits. Almost ran out of the building because it was like a 20-point difference, a 20-point game in the fourth quarter. All the stuff in the second half, the game was 35-7 in favor of Georgia. And so now you take a step back and you're like, man, you got beat by 15 against a 5-7 A&M team. You got destroyed by Georgia. And then you just got embarrassed against Florida State. So you're 1-4 in your last – 1-3 in your last four games. And now you have to start thinking, like, what are these coaching decisions? And the last thing I'll say about the week one thing, and I think that you'll love this because I know you're a fan of college football like all of us. But, like, one thing that's cool about all this stuff, the transfer portal, NIL, it's a completely new world. And I think that the TV revenue is trying to – and stations are kind of ruining some of the stuff for the fan. But one thing with this season in particular, it's this new age where there's so much uncertainty and unstable ground, and, like, where we don't know the things that we've always, like, seemingly known. Like, these teams are going to be legit or the recruiting classes are going to be like this. Not only are all these recruiting classes coming off of year three of the COVID year where you didn't have as many, like, the ability to scout high school players. So it's like a kind of a crapshoot with where you're putting the rankings anyway. But on top of that, now the high school recruiting rankings aren't even that important. So it's like there's just so much uncertainty. And it felt like maybe I'm just overreacting to week one, but it feels like one of those things where it's going to be like a 2007 or like even like a 2014 type of year when it's like you look up at the first playoff and you've got Mississippi State, A&M, Auburn, and Ole Miss in like the top six. And it's like it's just something crazy, right?
Yeah, I think that was – it's funny you say that. That was one of my first thoughts as the season kind of unfolded and everything because – it just feels like we are in store for so much chaos. And I think in some ways, some of it might start this week. I think there are some results on this week's slate that may trip some people up. So let's start with it, okay? We're going to go Friday night, Illinois going to KU. I know weird game to start with, but I got three siblings that went to KU. Yeah. Love what they did last year. They got the preseason Big 12 player of the year in Jalen Daniels coming back, although he couldn't play week one because he had an injury that was lingering. Jason Bean, very capable backup. They're wearing the Blackhawk uniforms on Friday night at the booth. And then you got Illinois with Brett Bielema. Let me drop this on you because it kind of put my brain in a pretzel. They've been playing football at Illinois for 130 years, okay? They went 8-5 last year. That's one of the top 15 winningest seasons in all of Illinois football history.
That's tough.
That's tough. And then struggled mightily against Toledo and KU 2.5-point favorite at home at the booth. So who you like in that one?
All right, so this is funny because we just got done recording our podcast and we talked about this game, and then my exact words to my co-host Tyler were, there's no chance I'm betting on this game. But since we have to pick it, like, I think that defense travels a lot. I think that, like, what Illinois has on the defensive line is really, really good. They got a former SEC quarterback at QB there with Luke Altmyer.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me not to go to Kansas, though, right? Like, you're at home. It's a sleepy kind of, like, Friday night game. And part of me just wants to say, like, just screw it and go indoors to whatever that arena is, like, down the street, I'm sure, and just go play basketball with these teams, and that would be even more fun than watching them try to play a football game for 60 minutes. But, I mean, I would take Kansas and probably to cover the 3. It's a suspicious line, though, because it seems too obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a funny line, I think, especially given Illinois' performance in week one. I mean, homie, they're 5 seconds away from losing their opener to Toledo. They have to kick a last-second field goal with 5 seconds left to pull one out against Toledo in week one, which, you know, it is what it is. Everybody, I never try to overreact to week one, but, you know, it's alarming if you're Illinois.
Yeah.
Look, I like it. Jalen Daniels is supposed to be healthy. I'm taking the Jayhawks. I'm biased, but they're going to have so much hype with the uniforms. Night game at the booth on a Friday night. I mean, that stadium's going to be filled and it's going to be popping. They announced big funding going into a renovation of the booth. It looks sick. Yeah. It's going to look like waving wheat. I mean, it's going to be really, really cool. So agreed with you, though, much more traditional basketball matchup. We'll see how it goes. But I'm also going to take Kansas. My co-host, James, is going to take Kansas as well. So I think we're all on Rock Chalk Jayhawk here on Friday night. Okay. All right. Saturday games, we're going to kick off with Notre Dame going to Raleigh and Carter Finley to play NC State. NC State brought in Brennan Armstrong from UVA to play quarterback. They looked, I thought, just okay against UConn week one. Notre Dame started off 2-0, obviously their big win in Ireland to start the year. And then they've got the sexy lumberjack, Sam Hartman, leading the charge there. My man with the long hair and the big beard. Doesn't he remind you of the Robert Redford gif where he looks up and smiles? Like, that's all I think of every time I see our boy Sam now running the offense.
To me, that's Robert Redford. That I just thought that was Zach Galifianakis.
Me too.
Like the country. It's Robert Redford. Like, that is the natural.
Robert Redford.
And then
the Alan natural
from the Hangover.
It's Roy Hobbs.
Yeah, right. No, this game I think is interesting. He does look like that, and I think that Sam Hartman he's been like great from a number standpoint so far, right? If you really watch that Navy game, I was big on Notre Dame in that game in every single area, like first half points, cover the full game spread, Sam Hartman over 2.5 passing touchdowns, and I hit every single one. I think it was like 4-0 in that game. But Sam Hartman, he missed a lot of throws. Like he was late on a lot of throws in that game. And it's, you know, you're going against Navy, so it's a little bit, you can get away with a little bit there. NC State has, and I believe it's Dave Doran, this team has played against Sam Hartman 3 times in his career. His numbers in those games, he had 6 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. It's been pretty middle of the road, pretty average. I'm going to take NC State at home. I know that, like, you know, they played a game against UConn last week that people kind of just want to shrug off, whatever, but UConn was a bowl team last year. At one point, that was a feather in the cap for Michigan on their strength of schedule because of how bad their strength of schedule was.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got NC State, especially because it's 7.5 to get the hook. I like that a lot.
Yeah. All right. So James is taking the Irish in this one. Man, I'm super conflicted on this. You know, true road game, playing in Ireland, even though I know it was across the Atlantic Ocean, is essentially a home game. What did they say? Something like 36,000 Notre Dame fans made the pilgrimage to Ireland for the ball game. Like, so essentially a home game there against Navy. Then you play a layup game against who they played last week. Tennessee State, I think, is who they played. So we don't really know who they're going to be. 7.5 as a road favorite, just, I don't know, man. It seems like a lot to me. I think it's going to be a fun matchup, but for me, it's more like a field goal game, maybe somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take the home dog, too. I like the Wolfpack to cover. I like Notre Dame to win straight up, but I like NC State and the points in this one. All right, next game. I mean, this is just going to be, I think, weekly now, the most electric matchup of the week. You got Nebraska going to Colorado in an old school, traditional Big 8 matchup. Kind of rekindling the rivalry. Some great games from the 90s. Nebraska coming off a tough loss with new coach Matt Rhule against Minnesota and the boys P.J. Fleck and Row the Boat up there. Colorado, obviously, most electric win of all week one, I think. Just dominated all the weekly awards after week one. Here's my thing, right? Colorado's a 3.5-point favorite. Does Nebraska even come close to having the – oh, it's down to two?
Yeah.
Something stinks out loud about that, because what offense does Nebraska have? That's what I want to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, how you feeling about this?
Everything you're saying is right, and something stinks about it. Like Vegas just begging you to do it. But anybody that knows me knows that I don't make good financial decisions, so I will absolutely follow it, and I will hammer Colorado. Because here's the thing, too. We've watched Nebraska struggle for so long, and like, and if you, maybe you feel comfortable and just take the money line and like do that instead, I don't know. But like, they got so much juice right now, and they put up, it wasn't like they won 17-13 last week. They put up a ton of points. And like, you're going to improve going to week two, and now you've got like confidence as a program. Like, because even if the players, I know that you go through the entire offseason, talk about like, you know, especially in that first game, we have this game, and you look forward to it, and that's what you think about in the workouts and the off, you know, off, like off season, like 7-on-7 stuff you're doing in the summer, all that kind of stuff. But like, there has to be some level of like hesitation and uneasiness. Like, is this going to work? Because he's talking a big game, but like, are we going to go play the team that was runner up in the national championship a year ago and beat them? And they do. And so now I think you're buying in, and if you're Nebraska, you got another new coach, and you're still doing the same stuff seemingly after the first one, where you have, you know, Jeff Sims has three interceptions and they're all costly against Minnesota. And now you come into a situation where it's like, if that game's in the fourth quarter and it's a one score game, there's no part of me that thinks Nebraska has like the mental fortitude or confidence to go win that game, especially on the road. Hammer Colorado. Can't wait to be wrong.
Yeah, James is taking Colorado. I'm going to take the Buffs too. Here's the thing, man. Look, they go on the road in a true road environment week one and hang almost half a hundred on Sonny Dykes' boys. And then now we're coming home to Folsom Field, to a sold out Folsom Field where everybody is jacked up about Coach Prime and the Buffs.
Yeah.
That place is going to be just absolute lightning from start to finish. When they run Ralphie out of there, that place is going to explode. And here's the other thing, brother. I know all the hype was about 86 players coming in. Ain't nobody talked about him bringing in Sean Lewis to be the offensive coordinator from Kent State. Like, that dude can coach, man.
Dude, at all.
Yes, and he called a hell of a ball game on Saturday. That TCU defense was on skates, which is the second straight game going back to the national title game last year, where they couldn't cover nobody. So, man, I love the Buffs in this game. I think they come out and just keep the momentum rolling.
Yeah.
And look, man, I mean, look, you telling me you're going to take Jeff Sims as an underdog in Folsom Field against Coach Prime? Come on now, get out of here.
I want to.
Bananas, man, no chance.
You know I pull for Georgia Tech team from
– No chance.
And here's the other thing, too. From the betting standpoint that I'll tell you you should be confident in, is the two-point thing stinks, like you said. But they were a 20.5-point underdog a week ago at TCU, and they went outright, right? So there's a chance that Vegas just hasn't been able to figure this out yet.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's a big part of it for sure. All right, the next one, man. We're getting a matchup of charter SEC members. We got Ole Miss playing Tulane at Tulane. I mean, Ole Miss going on the road to play the Green Wave. Look, man. Jackson Dart, they've hung 73 last week. I mean, I know it was Mercer, but still 73 points with the new clock rolls. That ain't nothing to sneeze at. Here's the problem for me with Tulane. They lost seven guys on defense, and they gave up 200 rushing yards a game last year. And now they don't have those seven dudes, and Lane Kiffin just licking his chops, baby. I mean, for me, this just seems like Ole Miss all day. But what you think? Ole Miss 6.5-point road favorite is the last line I had.
So here's a stat that should scare you if you are betting against Ole Miss. I love Ole Miss to cover, for one. I'll just get that out of the way now. I remember doing this last year saying going into the season, I had Jackson Dart preseason ranked in the top four as the fourth best quarterback in the SEC going into the year. Fun fact about ever making a list about top quarterback rankings in a conference, if you ever get the option to do it, especially for work, just don't, because it's awful and everyone disagrees with you and it's the worst. But the reason why I had Jackson Dart up there so high, even though he was unproven and hadn't been in the league yet, is because in the 10 years prior to that season, going into last year, Kiffin's offenses, whether he was an OC or a head coach, He had 8 of the 10 years. His quarterback had at least 3,000 yards passing and or 30 touchdown passes. The 2 years he didn't, he had a running back at FAU that had 29 touchdowns and I think like over almost like 2,000 yards. So he finds like his whole thing is like you figure out who your guys are and you just get them the football. It's very simple. It's like, you know, like it's like remember what Kirby said last year in one of those pregame speeches that will make you run through a wall where he was like, he's like, you see what you see and like or see and ball hit. I've just absolutely butchered this entire quote. But he said something about how like you see what's in front of you and you hit it. And then he screamed. And I remember getting like chills when he said it. He goes, shit's easy. And I was like, because that's how his mind works.
Yeah.
It's the same with Kiffin. It's like you just go put the ball in your playmaker's hands and the shit's easy. So Kiffin, like he's got Quinshon Judkins, which we all know what he can do.
Mm-hmm.
But now if you got Jaxson Dart and you got yep. some receivers and tight ends that actually want to play this year and aren't like kind of like locker room issues or off the field type stuff, like that's a guy like Jaxson Dart can go put up some numbers. You saw what he did in week one. I love Ole Miss to go out here and prove a point. I love Ole Miss to go out here and prove a point on Saturday.
So James is taking the green wave. He was on him a lot last year, and I think he's still rolling with him. I'm with you, brother. Man, I love the Rebels in this.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
I mean, I think it's going to be a day for the Land Sharks all day there in the Crescent City. So, yeah, I'm hammering Ole Miss as well. I think this is an awesome matchup for them. And hey, Charter SEC members, it just means more, folks. So let's just everybody tune in for that one.
Right.
All right. Lot of chatter about this one today. Everybody throwing ricochet shots left and right. Texas A&M going to Miami. Miami posting this week that if you buy tickets to this game, they'll give you a free ticket to the Georgia Tech game, which I think within an hour UCF had posted. Tickets sold out against Villanova. And then said something like, you know, 12th straight sellout or something like that. So everybody throwing ricochet shots at the Hurricanes, which is really, let's think of this, culturally, a travesty. I mean, they used to play in the Orange Bowl, brother, like the real Orange Bowl. And like it was ruckus every weekend. And now we got to give away tickets to go see the Hurricanes. It's a sad world. But look, man, Texas A&M put up, what, 58 points last week? They hadn't put up over 28 against an FBS team but one time all last season. So I don't know. Maybe we can score some points this year down in Aggie Land. I don't know. Maybe Jimbo got the coaching bug back. Miami coming back with Tyler Van Dyke. I don't know, man. Miami's one of those programs where I think they're gliding on their history. I can't remember the last time I tuned into a Miami game thinking, yeah, these dudes are good. So Texas A&M 3.5-point road favorite. How you feel about this one?
This is legit my lock of the week. And I took my first losing record last week, and I'm just strictly going money line from Sony because I'm trying to get back on track. But, like, because there's so many road favorites by a touchdown or less, and I love almost all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the stat you just brought up. They only scored over 28 one time against the FBS opponent because people immediately wanted to, like, kind of wanted to have like kind of like crap on Jimbo because it's fun, right? You go into this offseason of the year, go with all this hype, and you go 5-7. I don't remember the last time Bobby Petrino had a quarterback that wasn't good or put up ridiculous numbers. I just don't remember that being a thing ever. Jimbo, whether this thing works out or not, I don't know. Whether it works out Saturday, when you have like the 12th man coming in to face like the other 12th man, and what I mean by that is like the 12th man and like at A&M versus like the literal 12th man to walk into the stadium dressed in green and orange, like because that's about how many total fans they're going to have there.
Yeah,
like that. We've seen. I know it was New Mexico. I get all that, but like we saw this team open last year and score only 17 against Sam Houston State. We saw them play bad teams and still struggle, and that wasn't the case on Saturday. And Connor Wegman is legit. He's a former five-star, and he's got some weapons at receiver. He's got arguably the best. I think Georgia has a chance to supplant this, you know, later in the year once we get everyone going and everyone healthy. But, like, you know, those receivers being healthy always matters in games. But, no, with A&M, I think that they might have the best 1-2 punch at receiver maybe in the entire conference. I love A&M to win big here. And Jimbo's pretty good in bigger games. Like, people like to crap on him, stuff like that. Like, and most of that, if you're being honest, comes from that 2019 year where they were preseason top 10 and they lost five games. Well, they played five teams that were ranked in the top 10 that year.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, that's a tough slate for anyone.
Yeah, James is taking the Aggies. I'm taking them, too. I mean, this is – I'm the same, man. This just seems like a slam dunk. There's nothing about that Miami team that scares me, nothing about that environment that scares me. I think A&M's going to sling it, and I think they're going to do what they want most of the afternoon. So, yeah, we're all on the Aggies. All right, first rivalry trophy game of the year. You know I never miss these. I had like six of them when you came on last year.
Oh, God.
We got the Cy-Hawk trophy. Iowa and their explosive offense going to play Iowa State. Iowa, again, a 3.5-point road favorite. Do you like the Ferentz boys to score some points in Ames this weekend and cover?
Two funniest things I've seen on social media at the start of the season, possibly this week. One, Trump is going to this game.
I saw that.
Whether you like him or not, it's whatever. Like,
yeah, saw that.
So he's going to the game, and somebody made the comment that was like, "This is such a worse alternative to prison that it's like, because it's like Iowa State sucks, dude. It's like the over under is 36.5. It's awful. It's
hammer
awful.
The under.
Then the other thing is that. Yeah, like, for sure. The other thing is Iowa on the first drive of their first game of the season last week, they threw a touchdown pass. And I'm saying this in the most basic way possible because, like, that sounds, like, to any fan of a normal team, that sounds pretty ho-hum. They weren't playing anybody strong, but they started out the year on a drive, on the first drive of the game, and they threw a touchdown pass to end the first drive of the season. Fun fact, the last time they did that in a season was 1991. That I don't even know how to wrap my head around that.
I can't wrap my head around that. That is anyway, like they've set offense back 100 years.
1,000%. I will say I've seen this like floating between 3.5 to 4.5, and the 36 is tells me something. Iowa State has really struggled in the past couple of years. I'm taking the Iowa money line, but I think that Iowa State probably keeps it close. Maybe I don't know. There's like zero part of me that ever wants to go to Iowa, just ever.
Yeah. So James is taking Iowa. I just on principle I can't take them, man. There's the offense is so anemic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's terrible.
Yeah.
They're so awful to watch. I'm really just taking Iowa State on principle that I can't pick Iowa in a game that involves covering any type of points. Like, yeah, they may win, but
yeah.
It's going to be a squeaker if they do. So I'm taking the Cyclones to cover, but I assume the Hawkeyes will take home the Cy-Hawk trophy. All right, this next game is very interesting. I'm going to tell you why, okay? Texas State not only bringing in 56 players, but they do that because they got new head coach G.J. Kenny. Look, y'all, if y'all don't remember, G.J. Kenny, that boy could play. He could sling it, especially in high school. Coached the Incarnate Word last year, took Incarnate Word to the FCS semis last year, 12-2. They lit up the scoreboard all season long. Here's the best part about this, though. UTSA and the Roadrunners, hashtag meet, coached by Jeff Traylor, who was at one time G.J. Kenny's high school football coach. When they went 10-0, G.J. Kenny put up 47 touchdowns to one interception in that 2006 Texas high school season. So a lot of fun history between these coaches. Texas State had one of the big upsets of the week last week, walked the dog on Baylor. TJ Finley flinging it all over the field. Mm-hmm. They looked super electric. And they're, dude, UTSA kind of laid an egg. Frank Harris had a really tough game against Dana Holgerson in Houston. But the Roadrunners, 11.5-point home favorites over Texas State, which, sidebar, Texas State is not the Bobcats. If you are familiar with Great American Cinema, Necessary Roughness, Texas State is the Armadillos, so we will refer to them as such.
Yeah, fair. Also, the story you've just given about his high school career, if you would have told me at the tail end of that, that like Tim Riggins got caught getting drunk in like fifth period and stealing catalytic converters, it would have been the best episode of Friday Night Lights ever. Like, I thought that's where we were going.
We can end it however you want, brother. We got creative license.
No, I'll
get Peter Berg on the phone.
11.5 seems like a lot. Yeah, it's exactly. The 11.5 is a bunch, and I'm a big believer in UTSA. I think they bounce back. But what does concern me is actually no, they don't play Tennessee until 2 weeks from now. So I'll take UTSA. I don't love it, but I do expect them to bounce back. And they also kind of got screwed in that end of that game too against
they did.
That's a Power Five team going up against UTSA, and like I was surprised they only put up 14 points, but I haven't seen TJ Finley put up back to back anything in besides incompletions in the last 3 years. So I don't know how that's going to play out.
Yeah, so James is taking the Roadrunners. They were a darling of ours last year. I don't know if there was a week on the slate that we didn't take Meat. We were all in on that.
Yeah.
Just because of the points, I'm going to take Texas State. Like I said, I loved watching them last week. Thought they looked super exciting. And, dude, the 56 transfers they brought in, we're not talking like, you know, they brought the whole roster of Incarnate Word, man. They got some big-time players they brought in. Kids from Arizona. Kids that were committed to Texas or had played at Texas. I mean, they got some talent on that roster. And, like, look, TJ Finley got to be the best quarterback Texas State had in, like, two decades. So I think the 11.5 is what makes it interesting. I don't know that Texas State wins straight up, but I like them to cover that number. So I will take the Bobcats / Armadillos, and maybe they'll retire Paul Blake's number at halftime just to make my heart feel good. All right, next game on the slate, we got App State making a return trip to Chapel Hill, one of the craziest games of the season last year, which is why it's on the slate.
Yeah,
UNC, huge win last week in the Duke's Mayo Bowl. They looked, I think, a little more back to normal. I thought they would look a little more sluggish given that they lost Phil Longo, their offensive coordinator. But, man, they were rolling. And Drake May looked like we all thought he would last year, I think. They are 17.5-point home favorites over App State. Who you liking that one?
17.5 sucks. I wonder what the first half spread is on this. I'm taking UNC, and the reason why is the defense is different. It's different than it used to be, and I think that you're in a revenge game too, right? Like that game was pretty close last year, right? And I think they gave like 62 points or something crazy. Like it was absurd. One of the most impressive things I saw from a turnaround standpoint in week one, because I was very big, not very big, but I was big on South Carolina winning that game. I thought they were going to win by a decent amount because I thought the roster was better, which I found out, after I said it was untrue, which is never a good thing to do in this industry. But like, you know, UNC's got the 17th best roster ranking in like for talent or whatever in the 247 composite in the country. May is legit. Like that is a legit top five quarterback. And he lost his top two receivers, right? And then didn't have his top transfer guy coming in from the portal. He was incredible all night. And then the big thing, though, is from a turnaround standpoint was our boy Gene Chizik, man, one of the nicest people I ever met, one of the hardest worker I've ever been around in my entire life. And you can see, like, he just, everything he does with purpose. And I love Chizik to death. It's something I never thought I would say after what he did to Alabama and to me personally in 2010 in that comeback game. But I will say that his defense, having 17 total sacks in year one, in 14 games, they had nine, and over half of what they had a year ago, they had nine in week one. I like UNC to win. I think they win big. And they're a better team than I thought, man.
Yeah, James is taking the Tar Heels too. I'm the same boat, man. I was not a believer in that. I thought South Carolina would win that football game straight up. Did not happen. I think the other impressive thing about the nine sacks is, and look, we can have conversations about South Carolina's O-line, but Spencer Rattler's not exactly a stuck-in-the-pocket type quarterback. We're talking about a guy who can move, who can throw on the run, who can make plays happen. They bottled him up all night long. Yeah. You could tell he was frustrated. Dude, nine sacks is crazy, man. That's a season for some teams. Like, I mean, they're different. And to your point, they make a big decision tomorrow. I think Thursday is the meeting point for transfer receiver news to see what's going to happen on that, which maybe they get a big weapon back. Yeah. It'll be so, so stupid if that's not approved, but that's a whole nother conversation. But yeah, I'm with you boys. I like the Tar Heels.
Which is what the NCAA does every single turn.
Yeah, I like the Tar Heels at home. All right, big one of the week. You're going. You will be in Tuscaloosa. Texas coming to Bryant-Denny to play Alabama. Monster, monster game. 7 o'clock kick. The lights are going to be going at Bryant-Denny. Crowd's going to be crazy. This is interesting to me for a lot of reasons, right? Obviously, everybody talks about the game last year. I just, all offseason, I've been kind of quiet. We haven't said much about Alabama, but we've been very vocal on our show that if you don't put Nick Saban on the appropriate pedestal, something is wrong with you and you have not been paying attention. He is the best, and he's the best for a reason. And I just think when people try to put him in the ditch too soon, it is a mistake. And, yeah, man, I don't know. I just feel like this team has got something to prove. And I was pretty encouraged by how they looked offensively on Saturday. Opponent independent, I just thought they looked smooth. And I think everybody knew that he had the potential to be that. I mean, the kid is – he's fireworks. And so
– I don't think that. I don't think that everyone knew that.
Oh, man, I do. I liked what I saw of him in short spurts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he played to his youth last year when he got opportunities. But I think you can see the talent there, right? And if anybody's going to bring it out and develop it, it's going to be Nick Saban. And so my concerns about them have been – I didn't think it got talked about enough. You lose a transformational player like Bryce, and you lose another transformational player like Will Anderson. Neither one of those losses is anything to sneeze at. But I just think the way they recruit on a consistent basis, that roster is still one of the best in America. They're essentially two plays from being in the playoffs last year. So, yeah, I mean, you probably know where I'm going to go with this. Texas is obviously interesting. Texas is, I guess, according to everybody, quote-unquote, back. But we'll see on that. Roll Tide, 6.5-point home favorite is what I had on the number. Where are you sitting on that, brother?
I love everything you just said. And you can see from the smile, like, I am fired up about people doubting Nick Saban because it's just so damn dumb. It's just so damn dumb. And I sat here all offseason, and now listen, like, part of my job is in social media, so I know that I'm like, the stuff I'm seeing isn't from like smart people all the time. But I don't know how many times I saw Georgia fans say Kirby hasn't, you know, Saban hasn't been anything since Kirby left, or, you know, Tennessee fans talking about how like this is now like the new order, or whatever you want to say, like this is the new norm, right? LSU, like there were people scoffing at me at media days, like media members I respect that were just like, explain to me why, like why? One person said to me, and I quote, why do you think Bama beats LSU or wins the West outside of anything besides, oh, Saban always does it? And I was like, do I need another reason? Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Going into this year, I knew the Jalen Miller thing. If he played, it's going to be the most fun and entertaining season they've had since 2014. They didn't win the national title in 2014, but it was one of my favorite years of all time, just because it was like, you didn't win it before. You lost one game or two games actually in the bowl game, but like on horrific fashion. I mean, you talk about two losses by 4 points. And here's the thing too. I don't know if Saban wins another national championship, because I don't know if he can compete with what Kirby's doing from a coaching or roster standpoint, just to be honest. But the idea that this whole thing is over with and he's not going to compete for championships is asinine. And because he's still – the thing I learned most about week one, Kevin Steele comes in, his whole MO, getting to the quarterback and forcing turnovers. They were +2 in the turnover margin, which doesn't seem like much. They didn't have a single game last year in the regular season where they were +2. Not a single one. Like, Tommy Rees on offense, Jalen Miller looks fantastic. They were 77% on third downs. That's the third highest in the last 10 years. And oh, by the way, Tyler Buckner, the transfer that everyone, including me, thought wasn't going to play at all, like, was awful. Why would they even bring him in? He's your second string guy. And then the last one, at least, from a coaching standpoint, two penalties for 19 yards. It's the fewest penalties you've had in the game in the last 50 total games. It's almost like, and hear me out here, this is going to be crazy, it's almost like Saban knew what he was doing the whole effing time. That being said, my long-winded soapbox that you knew I was going to get on, I love Sark, and I love Sark when he has dudes, and I've said it all offseason. I was on record a lot. Drew Butler put me on blast for this. I think that Texas, I said 2 weeks ago, I think Texas wins that game by 10 plus points. I don't think that now. I'm going to walk that back a little bit because of what I saw from Bama in week one. But when I watch and I think about this game playing out, it has every feel of like Sark is going to take the ball first, and he is so good on script. And I fully expect Texas to score first, and I fully expect Texas to probably get off to a pretty early start or a good start in the first quarter with them up. I think they could be like a 14-3 type situation. And Bama has to claw their way back. I don't know if that offense is able to claw their way back because I haven't seen it before. You know? So I'm taking Texas to win outright.
Woo!
Yeah.
I'm like, you could knock me over with a feather right now, brother. I would not have guessed that. All right. My co-host James is taking Texas too. I'm saying this out loud right now. I'm going to be the only person on this program tonight to take them to not just win but to cover. I'm taking Roll Tide because here's my thing. Okay, I'm with you on Sark. Okay, mm-hmm. I love what he does. I thought he was probably the most underrated piece of the 2020 national title team.
Yeah.
Like, those game plans were outrageous, and I am excited to see what he does with weapons. I mean, look, they got A.D. Mitchell there. They got Quinn Ewers. They got all these players, right? But here's my thing, okay? We're talking about playing in prime time in Bryant-Denny against the greatest coach in the history of college football, all the ghosts, all of it. And speaking of elephants, that's about the size balls that Quinn Ewers is going to have to walk out of Tuscaloosa with a win for the Longhorns. I'm saying he doesn't have them yet. I'm not saying he may not get them at some point, but it ain't happening. I'm going Roll Tide on this, man. It's going to be a houndstooth kind of night. So I can't believe I'm the only one. This is crazy. All right. Last game. We're going to stay in the state of Alabama, but the game will be held in California. We got the Auburn Tigers going to play Cal. This just kind of interesting to me because Auburn got a lot going on. Hugh Freeze back there, which I like that hire. You and I haven't really talked about that much, but I thought that was a good hire there. Hugh Freeze can coach, man. I mean, you say what you want about the moral standards and all those things, but that dude can coach some ball.
Nobody pretends to have more morals outside of politicians than Auburn fans. It's ridiculous. It's absurd.
The Cal thing for me is interesting because Auburn's only a 6.5-point favorite, which I say only. I know it's a cross-country trip and it's on the road, but like, Cal stinks out loud, man. So, like, what am I missing on this? Tell me.
Jaden Ott's really good at running back. It's a team that played pretty well at times last year. And like, they're – I don't know if you've ever been to Cal Stadium, but it's so ridiculous. Have you really?
Not for a game, but, like, just like a tour, not for a game.
Same. And it's like nestled into like, it's like a clubhouse. It's like it nestled into the woods on one side. And then you look across the bay and you can see the Golden Gate Bridge. It's pretty cool. But it's also like, I think there's going to be a bunch of Auburn fans that probably go out there. I think that the bet here, if you're talking about from a betting standpoint, is the over at 53.5. I mean, Cal was a 5-point favorite last week against North Texas, which was a really trendy pick to take North Texas, like even with the money line. And they just beat the brakes off of them, like 58-21, I want to say. I'm taking Cal to cover. I think Auburn wins outright. But I think it's just such a sleepy game. And the thing that worries me is that, like, Auburn's run defense was what was kind of surprisingly sketchy a little bit last week against a bad UMass team. I think there's a lot of points in this game. But I think Cal keeps it close. And they're at home. And, you know, so I'm taking Cal to cover.
All right, James is doing the same. James is taking the Golden Bears to cover. Again, I'm going to go against you guys. I'm going to take Auburn. I'm going to stick with it just means more. I think Auburn goes out there, plants a little bit of a flag, and has some fun on the West Coast. Remind me, because I'm thinking it's the same place. Isn't Cal the spot where you can like sit up on the hill and look down into the stadium like from the woods? That's like a perch you can have for the game. Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man. I'm all about that. I think.
Yeah, if you didn't want to pay the $8 to get in there.
Right. Yeah, talk about giving away free tickets. I feel like maybe they'll give away if you come to the Auburn game, we'll give you a free ticket to the game when we play Stanford. All right, this one will not count against your tally, but we always have to pick it because you're on a dog show, brother. The Cardinal of Ball State is rolling into Athens as a replacement for Oklahoma. Would have been a much, much sexier matchup to be in Norman this weekend. The Dogs are 41.5-point favorites over the lowly Cardinals from Ball State. How you feeling about the girth on that number?
What a word. Dude, hammer Georgia.
I knew you would love it.
I don't know. Maybe you don't hammer Georgia, but like definitely bet Georgia. And the reason why is because now they got it. Like, it's just, I wish that everybody, including myself, probably would have shut up a little bit after that first game or first quarter, or first half, we're going to say, because it was like, they did come out sluggish, and it wasn't the seamless transition we all thought it was. But you know that practice was hell this week, and because they've now they actually have some people that have doubted them, like some minuscule amount. So, and Kirby is better than anybody that at getting people to believe in, again, outside of a politician, outside of, like, believing in these lies that they're going to go 7-5. So, I love Georgia in this game. Thoughts and prayers to Ball State. I think this is like. Because they're not going to let up. And now you have something to work on. So, yeah, this is going to be ugly. Ugly. It's going to look just like Carson Beck, to be honest.
Oh, tough. What a ricochet shot for CPZ. Yeah, that's tough. So that's tough for 1-5. Oh, thoughts and prayers. Yeah. James hates a big number like this, so he has taken the Cardinals. He does not like the dogs to cover this number. Oh, boy. This is dicey for me, man, because this is one of those games where – They're going to call the dogs off. We talked about this last week. Like, Kirby, I feel like, is not one, especially against smaller schools, to, like, rub a coach's face in it unless he has a vendetta. Shane Beamer. And so, yeah, I don't know that they will have guys in and call plays enough to get to the 42. Maybe they have a defensive turnover or something. I'll take Ball State, too, just because that number's so huge. But I do love, it's such a full circle thing. I seem to remember our good friend asking Coach Kirby Small, Paul Smart, a question about going 7-5, somewhat tongue-in-cheek. And now he is the person that has given the bulletin board material after first quarter week one. Love it.
One thing I will not do is learn a lesson. That is one thing about me. Ugh.
Well, Chris, we always love having you on the show, brother. Please tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can support your show, and all those things.
Yeah, man. Well, so if you're a Georgia fan, don't. Just don't, because I don't think it's going to end well for either of us. So you don't need to find me. No, I'm kidding. Saturday Football Uncensored is the podcast. We have new episodes every Thursday, and then we have a live episode on Sunday as well. So check that out, and then it's Vern Funquist on social media. I appreciate you having me, man. I know we talked about doing 30 minutes, and I don't know what happened after. Like, I looked up, and there was 16 minutes, and then it was at 46, and I'm sure I filled all of the air and all the oxygen, just like the Colorado TCU game. I'm so sorry, but this is always a blast, man, and I will definitely have to come back again soon.
Well, you're welcome anytime, brother. We always love having you, and we know you want to stay because you always have such a good time with us. We can't fault you for that. So, yeah, brother. Sure. We have a great time in Tuscaloosa this weekend, and we can't wait to have you back on again soon.
Thanks, dude.
Hey, George is better now.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.